Hello, this is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL. Catholic Baltimore is a weekly radio program hosted by the Archdiocese of Baltimore, airing each Sunday following the broadcast of the Radio Mass of Baltimore. We are grateful to our Catholic radio partners for sharing with us some of the contents in this program and for the opportunity to bring quality Catholic programming to the Archdiocese of Baltimore every Sunday.
I'm Bob Krebs, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. Ignatius Press recently published a fascinating book titled Stories About St. John Paul II, Told by His Close Friends and Co-workers. This book, written by a Polish journalist and longtime Vatican newspaper correspondent, contains interviews with St. John Paul's closest friends and associates, including Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI. To discuss this book, I'd like to welcome to Catholic Baltimore Anthony Ryan from Ignatius Press.
Morning. Thank you for having me on.
Well, Polish journalist Wolesław Rzeziak, I knew I said that wrong, but it was a good try.
That was good.
He interviewed 24 men and women for this book and kind of compiled this book. Tell us a little bit about the author, if you would, please.
Sure. The author with that easy Polish name, and the reason I'm doing the interview and he is not, is that he is in Rome and he doesn't really speak English. So,
But he
is a Polish journalist who has worked for more than 30 years in the Vatican, and especially on the Vatican newspaper, L'Osservatore Romano. So because he's had this long connection in the Vatican and with the Vatican paper and as a writer, and he got to know, first of all, he's Polish, so he came really to the Vatican to work in connection with the papacy of John Paul II, way back in the day. So he spent the rest of his life there, and he still is there. And when John Paul II died, he wanted to put together a book like this one. At least he had the idea of putting together a book like this one that we're talking about today, of testimonies of people who were close to John Paul II in different aspects of his life, people that actually knew him when he was a young guy, growing up in Poland all the way up until his death, others who worked with him closely as a cardinal in Poland, and then those who worked close with him when he was John Paul II as the Pope. And so since he's a journalist, he did finally decide to go ahead and do this book, and who he's going to interview, and so forth. And then we were sent this book by the Italian publisher, and once we read it, there's a lot of good books on John Paul II, and so we were a little bit reluctant to think if we could do another one. We have quite a few ourselves, either by John Paul II or bought him. But once we read this one, we saw that he had some original and unique, great stories about John Paul II, told by those who were closest to him that have never been told before.
Mm-hmm. How did the author decide who to interview, and who are some of the people in the book that he did interview?
Well, as I say, he wanted to interview those who he felt knew the Pope best, those who were his close friends, those who were his co-workers, those who could tell stories about him from their own experience with John Paul II that other people would not know about, and give us new insights in this man who is, considered one of the great saints of the 20th century and one of the great popes in the history of the Church. So that was his idea. So, and since he had this connection by working for so long in the Vatican and on the Vatican newspaper, he was in a position where he could connect with a lot of these people. So, I mean, the list is quite, there's quite the variety of people here. So, for example, there is the man who was his personal secretary for years and years, both in Poland and then when he was the Pope, who is now a cardinal. He was Father Zhivich back then, way back. I think he eventually became a bishop, an archbishop, when he was under John Paul II. After John Paul II died, he went back to Poland. He's now Cardinal Zhivich. So this man knew him maybe better than anybody. So he was interviewed. You got a man like Joaquin Navarro Valls, who was the Pope's personal spokesman, or we might call him press secretary for all 27 years of his papacy. Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, he knew the Pope very well. He's interviewed. You've got his vicar for the Diocese of Rome, Cardinal Ruini, who's in here. You've got the Secretary of State under John Paul II, Cardinal Solano. But then you've got people like his photographer, the papal photographer, Arturo Mari. Mm-hmm. You've got his own personal doctor, so the Pope's physician. You got the man who was the postulator for the cause of the canonization of John Paul II. You've got the people who are recipients of the miracles of John Paul II's intercession in heaven they use for his canonization.
Wow.
And then finally, and those are just some, there's 24 people in here, but and then probably the best, in my opinion, is his, at least the one I like, one of the ones I like the most, is Joseph Ratzinger, who became Pope Benedict XVI, his successor, is interviewed. And he was interviewed after he stepped down from the papacy, and this is the only interview he's ever given since he stepped down, Benedict XVI, because he loved John Paul II so much. And of course, he had his own unique insights. He worked under John Paul II as the head of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith for all those years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they were very close. I mean, he was really, in some ways, John Paul II's right-hand man, Joseph Ratzinger. And Cardinal Ratzinger at the time. So he's interviewed in this book, and also his homily is printed in here for the beatification of John Paul II. So that's kind of a slice of some of the people that are interviewed in this book on the stories of St. John Paul II.
Mm. Is there anything that surprised you about this book? Anything that jumps out?
You know, John Paul II is always full of surprises, right? I mean, you know, he was my pope when I grew up, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was the pope for 27 years. So, he is a man of surprises. I mean, his election was a surprise. He's the first non-Italian pope in, 450 years, the first pope from Poland ever. And then as we followed his papacy, he was always doing things that were different and unique and kind of surprising and inspiring. So, you know, in that sense, I would say no. I mean, because since we've got to know him so well and for so long for his papacy,
right.
And I went to World Youth Day and, you know, all those things, I was always kind of aware of the kind of things that he would do that would just be different from
mm-hmm,
Pope. You know,
mm-hmm.
His great travels, his great sense of humor, his warm humanity. I mean, that's the thing that Ratzinger talks about is the great humanity of John Paul II, his incredible warmth, his incredible love of the individual person. Whenever he was with anyone, and I guess this is one thing that I kind of maybe was deeply more etched in my mind about John Paul II, you could maybe call that a somewhat of a surprise, is even based on the words of someone as great as Ratzinger, the thing that really impressed him, and the author asks him that, is there one thing that really impressed you the most about John Paul II? Ratzinger said that he was a man of great human warmth, and that even though on the world stage he could impact so many people with the huge groups that came to hear him wherever he was, in Rome and other places, whenever you were with him one-on-one, he treated every person you know, as if they were a gift from God. Every person was important to John Paul II, and he would remember them. That's the other thing, is he would remember them. His memory was incredible. So that you can imagine how many people he met. Maybe you can. I can. I mean, you know, as the Pope for 27 years, and then before that, he was a man who was always meeting people.
Mm.
But the author said that he would remember people after he met them because he was so focused on the dignity and the beauty of the individual person. I thought that was incredible.
Well, I haven't finished reading it. I've just read a few of the chapters, but it seems that there's a common thread, at least in the chapters that I've read, is that people who knew him well knew that he was a saint, but they kind of kept it to themselves. They could identify, yes, he's the Pope, but there's also something very, very deep in this man that makes him special.
Yeah, exactly. And Ratzinger talked about that and others, that he was a man of really deep prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was his what made him, you know, so connected with God and with others, is that he was, because he was a man of deep prayer and especially focused on the Eucharist as the and the Mass as the center of his life,
mm-hmm.
for his prayer life, that he received that grace not only to grow close to God, but to therefore connect with humanity as God's agent. And so it was evident to these people that he was very holy, he was close to God, and he loved humanity.
Anthony, thanks for being with us today on Catholic Baltimore.
Hey, Bob, thanks for having me on. Thanks for the great work you guys do on your Catholic radio program there. Appreciate it.
Stories about St. John Paul II, told by his close friends and co-workers, is available at www.ignatius.com or from your favorite Catholic bookstore or online bookseller. For Catholic Baltimore, I'm Bob Krebs.
Catholic news from the Archdiocese of Baltimore and around the world with the Catholic Review. The latest craze to have overtaken the world is Pokemon Go, an interactive video game in which users hunt animated creatures, or Pokemon, using their mobile phones. The creatures can be found sitting in restaurants, in city parks, in the middle of the road, and sometimes even in churches. If you don't understand it, neither do I. But the next time you see millennials with their faces buried in their phones, bumping into the cheese display at the grocery store, at least you'll know what they're up to. Some parishes, such as Our Lady of Hope in Dundalk, are doing their best to evangelize off the craze. Father T. Austin Murphy, Jr., pastor of Our Lady of Hope, has posted a sign on the church door welcoming players and displaying the parish website and contact information for prayer requests. As Father Murphy puts it, there are a lot of souls to save and a lot of those little animals to catch. Read more at CatholicReview.org. One of our bloggers, Rita Buettner, author of the popular Open Window blog, is an unapologetic Pokemon Go addict. So far, she has three posts about the game, all available at CatholicReview.org. In her latest post, she notes that her pastor actually mentioned the game in his homily. He noted that people are so distracted by it, they are seeing less of the world around them. Okay, that's a legitimate point, Buettner concedes. However, she continues, imagine if we approached our faith like these addicted gamers approached Pokemon Go. Read more at CatholicReview.org. When you get tired of Pokemon Go, stay on our website for a more serious coverage and commentary. Julie Walsh, a former lobbyist, tackles some heavy political topics in her new blog, The Space Between, also at CatholicReview.org. From the newsroom of the Catholic Review, this is Eric Zygmunt.
Do you want to know more about what's going on in the church and the world than you can get from your daily newspaper or local TV? Read the only publication in the Archdiocese of Baltimore that covers the church full-time, The Catholic Review. Pick up the print magazine monthly at your parish or have The Catholic Review delivered to your home every month. You can get fresh news every day online at CatholicReview.org. Subscribe to the Catholic Review e-newsletter for twice-a-week updates. Just text CR Media to 84576. Find our app on Apple and Android, and follow the Catholic Review on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Wherever your faith takes you, Catholic Review Media is ready to inspire, teach, inform, and engage. Read it today, in print and online, at CatholicReview.org. That's CatholicReview.org.
You are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL.
I'm Bob Krebs, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. Michael O'Neill is the creator of the website MiracleHunter.com and hosts the Miracle Hunter radio program on Relevant Radio. His latest book is titled Exploring the Miraculous, published by Our Sunday Visitor. Michael O'Neill is my guest today on Catholic Baltimore. Welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me today, Bob.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, if you would, please.
Well, I basically have gotten into miracles through a lifelong interest in them given to me by my mother. My mom was, she was a devout Catholic, and as a young child, she had her devotion to Our Lady of Guadalupe, and when she was young, her mother actually fell away from the Catholic faith, and my mother prayed to Our Lady of Guadalupe to bring her back, and whether it's a miracle or not, she did in fact come back to the faith, and she became a model of devotion for us, even before she died, her whole life. But like many Catholics do, she made a deal with God. She had said, God, bring my mother back to the faith, and in exchange, I will tell the story of your mother under the title of Our Lady of Guadalupe to any children you bless me with, and I'll become a school teacher someday and teach my school kids every December 12th, the story of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And so that became a real favorite of mine, that story. And I really began to consider it the second greatest story ever told. But when I got to college, I wanted to look into this. And I took a break from my engineering classes and enrolled in an archaeology class. And for a final paper, I chose the topic of Our Lady of Guadalupe's Tilma. And I really wanted to see, was there any legitimacy to it? And along the way, I spent so much time researching, and my eyes opened up to all these miracle claims throughout history. And they really got me started. And at graduation, I was trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life and my career. And I got some advice from Condoleezza Rice, who was the vice provost at Stanford, where I was. And she said, whatever you do, become an expert in something. Mm. And that sort of set me going. I said, okay, I want to be an expert in these miracles. And that's what kind of got the whole thing started. And I started MiracleHunter.com, and things have really blossomed from there. So that was kind of the beginning of it all.
Yeah. And Michael, you know, people consider miracles different things. You know, if a student gets an A on a test that he thought he was going to fail, they consider that a miracle. Or somebody coming back to the church, as you mentioned, that may have been a miracle. But for the purpose of your research and for your book, what makes a miracle a miracle?
It's a great question. I mean, I think there's, like you say, a great variety of people who, you know, have an impossible comeback in a football game, or find that wedding ring that they lost, or
sure.
any other small thing is miraculous with a small M, maybe. But the miracles with a big M, I'm looking at those things throughout history that the Catholic Church has investigated and approved. And in earlier ages, that all started with the Council of Trent, where they did serious investigations. But I look at miracles where there's a great tradition and support of the faithful, a sensus fidelium, where the miracles have had an impact on people and have resulted in great churches and great devotions and the canonization of saints, all these big miracle stories. And there's so many of them throughout history. The church is so rich. It's a vast tapestry, throughout, woven together throughout all the ages, of all these incredible miracles from all over the world. So I tried my best. It's a difficult challenge, but I tried my best to paint a picture of all the types of things that the church has considered miraculous throughout the ages, and what has happened as a result of the lives of people.
Give us a few examples, if you would, of the miracles that are covered in your book, or at least the types of miracles.
Absolutely. So when I first set out to write the book, I was pitching the book idea to our Sunday visitor, who's a publisher, and my website, of course, MiracleHunter.com, has all these Marian apparitions. That's kind of been the focus of my research throughout the years, is, and my great interest. And I was going to write a book on Marian apparitions, and they said, why don't you write a book on all miracle types? So I said, okay, I guess I'll take on that challenge. So in the book, we have these things like Marian apparitions and Eucharistic miracles, and we have healings and also stigmata and incorruptible bodies, and the whole gamut of things that the church has considered miraculous. And I dedicate one chapter to healing miracles, which actually kind of wraps into a conversation about canonization causes, because essentially every miracle that's used by the Catholic Church to validate that a saint is with God and intercessing for us is a medical miracle. So I went through that whole process of how they validate miracles and check them out and approve them in a canonization clause. So it's a little bit of a technical chapter, but for anybody who's interested in how saints are come to be, that I think it's a good resource.
Michael, what do you want your readers to take away from this book?
Well, it's a great question, because miracles, I think, are important to everyone in their own kind of way. I think even skeptics and atheists have to have an explanation for the inexplicable. And miracles seem to bolster people's faith. That seems to be sort of a universal thing. I mean, I used to joke that, you've got Beatles, puppy dogs, and ice cream as being the three things that everybody likes. And for Catholics, you can add miracles to that short list. It seems that every person I've spoken to has a great interest in miracles. I used to kind of keep this study to myself, but I really found that people love it. And so the book will open people's eyes about what miracles have happened throughout the world. And people who are skeptical, saying that the church promotes all miracles and just wants people to, you know, attend their shrines and buy their rosary beads, they'll find out how strict the church is to investigate these things. So I think people who are interested in the process of how miracles are investigated and validated, I think they'll be fascinated by the book. And also people will be amazed at all the different miracles that have happened throughout church history and that they've actually been said to be worthy of belief. So it's kind of an eye-opening thing from that point of view.
Yeah. As you did research for this book, do you have any favorite miracles or perhaps something that surprised you, something that you learned that you didn't know before that you kind of thought, wow, this is pretty terrific?
Well, I think that Our Lady of Guadalupe will always remain my favorite miracle just because of the history there I did enjoy writing about her again, and I devote some time to her as well as to the Shroud of Turin. I've got some newer evidence in there that says that maybe it is in the medieval forgery, so I think people might enjoy that. But for me personally, I think some of these Eucharistic miracles are so dramatic. And one of the things with Eucharistic miracles is that science can validate them. You know, when you have a visionary, for example, claiming visions, they really rely on the testimony of a good witness in order to say that this has happened. There'll be some miracles that sort of are associated that help the church validate visions and apparitions. But with Eucharistic miracles, science can really get in and test what's going on. And in some cases, very few cases throughout history, but there have been some, where the bread and wine has been transformed into real flesh and real blood that's testable by science. And so we have a few cases like that, and to me that just blows my mind. And you know, anytime you can get science on your side saying this miracle didn't happen, that's really good.
That's amazing. Michael, thanks for being with us today on Catholic Baltimore.
Thanks, Bob. I was happy to be with you today. Thank you.
Exploring the Miraculous is available from Our Sunday Visitor Press at www.osv.com or from your favorite Catholic bookstore or online bookseller. For Catholic Baltimore, I'm Bob Krebs.
The season of sacraments is nearly here. First Holy Communion, Confirmation, and Weddings. Visit the Baltimore Basilica, America's first cathedral, and stop by the gift shop for all of your gift needs. From beautiful frames to crucifixes and crosses, statues and one-of-a-kind rosaries, the Basilica Gift Shop has it all. Friendly, knowledgeable staff members can help you select the perfect gift. Also available, Baltimore's very own Mouth Party Caramels, locally designed hand-painted signs and jewelry, plus gifts for Easter as well as an extensive line of St. Patrick's Day items sure to bring out the Irish in everyone. Visit the Basilica Gift Shop at 409 Cathedral Street in Baltimore or call 410-727-3565 for hours and directions. Free street parking available directly in front of the Basilica between 9:30 and 4 p.m.
Life can be hard, and at times we feel overwhelmed and alone. When faced with problems, know that there is a group of Catholics who are part of the prayer ministry of the Archdiocese of Baltimore, waiting to lift you and your needs to God in prayer. This ministry is comprised of men and women, young and old, religious and lay, from every ethnic and cultural background. They pray as individuals and in groups, in homes and meeting spaces throughout Baltimore. Like you, they are people who have suffered the same hurts, fears, pains, sickness, loss, and everyday burdens. Learn more about this ministry by visiting our website at www.archbalt.org. If you are in need of prayer, send your prayer request to prayers@archbalt.org or by phone to 410-547-5517. Would you like to volunteer to be a part of the ministry? Prayer ministers are always needed. Please call or email our coordinator, who would be happy to speak with you.
For 143 years, New Cathedral Cemetery has served the needs of the Catholic community of Baltimore and Central Maryland. New Cathedral is the only cemetery owned by the Archdiocese of Baltimore and is the final resting place for many religious orders and famous citizens. 125 acres of rolling hills, trees, and beautiful monuments, the cemetery is an oasis of peace and tranquility and is located off Edmondson Avenue just outside of Catonsville. New Cathedral is dedicated to the task of tending to the mortal remains of our dearly departed and has many more years of available space. If you are in need of a burial site, vault, monument, or marker, or just a respectful location to place your cremated loved ones, our counselors will help you through this process and make sure the wishes of you and your loved ones are honored. Visit us online at newcathedralcemetery.org, like us on Facebook at New Cathedral Cemetery Bonnie Bray, or call 410-566-7770.
For over 200 years, the Archdiocese of Baltimore's Catholic schools have welcomed families of all faiths, providing generations of students with an academically excellent value-based education taught in a Christ-centered environment. With a 99% graduation rate, the highest in the nation, and a 98% college attendance rate, Catholic school graduates are better prepared to succeed in college and beyond. But Catholic schools offer more than an education. They offer tradition, family, faith, and the opportunity for students to grow as individuals and as future leaders in their community. Discover these and other benefits of a Catholic school and learn more about why Catholic schools are an unparalleled value in education in the Baltimore region. Call 1-800-5-CATHOLIC or visit www.archbalt.org. Catholic schools, a place to grow.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Catholic Baltimore. As we prepare for the week ahead, let us do so in prayer together as one community of faith. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Let us also ask the blessing and intercession of our Blessed Mother as we pray. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. May God bless us and keep us always in his love.